Good afternoon and welcome. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm Kim Mariano. Welcome. And Eric, our producer, is here as well. I want to ask you a question. What
sure.
is that fireball in the sky? Holy moly, it's hit me right in the side of my face.
Well, that's a nice change of pace for December, right? For late December?
It's awesome. You know, they say that Seattle is the sunglass capital of the world, and I think I figured out why.
That's true.
Because that sun is so low. It you know, usually in the summertime, the sun's above you. But I noticed that the sun is so, it hits you right in the side of your face. I don't think it's like that in California.
Well,
do you think?
It does hit you right in the face in California.
Oh, okay. Well,
I've been down there around Christmas time. But what I was going to say is I think it's because we've got so much cloud cover, and then as soon as the sun breaks through, we're not used to it. So it takes a while for our eyes to acclimate. So then we got to throw the sunglasses on to, you know, protect ourselves from crashing our cars.
Maybe that's it. We have that deep voice you just heard is Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson is with us, and he is going to talk with us a little bit today about Occupy Seattle. Hi, Tim. Welcome back.
Hi, nice to be here.
Oh, he says in his
low voice.
So sexy voice.
Maybe,
you do? Well, it works for you.
So, yeah.
Thanks for great radio codes. Colds do, I guess. Well, I wanted to welcome everybody to the show today. I took a little break last week and I'm joining you back, so I'm a little bit rusty. But we'll have a really great show today. We're going to talk a little bit more today about, okay, so now what? Now that this whole Occupy movement is kind of taken, you know, a back seat, so to speak, in the news because of Christmas and Newt Gingrich and everything else that's going on right now. But it is still alive and kicking. And so we want to know what the update is and what's going on. So we'll be talking with Tim here shortly.
I know I still see the tents in certain places, like Tacoma, for instance. And I'm thinking, it's getting very cold.
Yeah.
So
nothing compared to what's going on
happen.
In Denver and
yeah.
in other places of the country and the world, so to speak. This is a worldwide movement. So I think it's a good time to touch base and see really what's going on with these organizations and what the movement of the country is around that. And to that point, I wanted to bring up something today in the first segment here that I found extremely fascinating. And it was a bit validating for me because as someone who works in human resources and organizational psychology, I have had this belief and opinion that the next generation of workforce coming up is going to be very independent. They have watched what happened to their older brothers and sisters and their parents in the workforce. And what they have found is that you work very, very hard and you make a lot of money, but you don't necessarily have the time that you want with your family. The balance is not there. And I had hypothesized along with some other folks that, you know, I can see this next generation being very independent, meaning that they're just going to subcontract themselves out. And so they work when they want. They don't work when they don't want to work. They have control of their own destiny, and it's really going to reshape our corporate culture. Organizations like Microsoft and Cisco that hire large numbers of people, you know, at some point in time, maybe hiring contractors in large numbers than not. And so I've had this kind of theory, but not really a lot to back it up with. I just, you know, just based on my own anecdotal. Well, I was reading today validation, workforce.com. did a survey, and they have found that more than half of the United States workforce, or 70 million people, will be independent workers by 2020, according to a prediction that is part of an MBO partner study on work previews. An earlier report by the MBO partners found that there are currently 16 million independent workers today. So in the next 8 years, we're going to go from 16 million independent workers, I'm going to explain what that is in a minute, to 70 million over the next 8 years.
Well, 9% of the country already independent workers, whether they like it or not.
Well, and it's even more than 9% because we talked about that before, too. It's actually closer to 16 and 17% of unemployed and people that are underemployed. Mm-hmm. So these are people that are making significantly, and I'm not talking a little bit, significantly less than what they're actually worth in the workforce. These are people that are doing part-time jobs. They might be doing, you know, Walmart greeters or barista jobs when they have a PhD. I mean, the situation out there is rather grim if you're looking at things from traditional perspective. However, for someone like me, I think it's an exciting shift, a huge shift in the way that we look at work. Because what's going to happen is people are going to say, well, I'm not fitting the square peg in the round hole in corporate America anymore. I mean, it would be nice to have a job where, you know, I can just show up and get paid a lot of money, but that doesn't exist anymore. So now I need to go find my passion, market myself, and now I can choose what I want to do for a living and choose how I want to spend a third of my life.
Well, it used to be you would work for a company for, say, 30 years and stay loyal to that company, and then you would get a pension and then some health care and insurance benefits when you retired. But that no longer seems to exist.
And that's true of the baby boomer generation.
You kind of independently have to make your retirement nowadays. So if people are independently doing that, it makes sense that people would go, well, geez, why do I need the company to begin with if they're not providing me with that kind of safety net anymore.
What I need. Yeah, exactly. That incentive isn't there anymore. And I would say that incentive was gone with the Gen Xers. I think the Gen Xers were the first generation. I think the expectation was that a typical Gen Xer, which, you know, to put definitions around this, not labels, but definitions, a Gen Xer is born right around that 1968 timeframe up until 1980. That generation is expected to change jobs at least seven times, to change careers, I think, two or three times. So that has been kind of the norm. And then we come to the millennials, and it's a complete shift in thinking that we're not talking about job changes. We're talking about being educated in your passion or what it is that you want to do. And you can work for 20 or 30 different companies over the course of your lifetime, but you're an independent contractor. So, you know, the first question that I have is, are we preparing the kids, my kids, you know, that are in first and third grade right now for this reality? I would say no, that we don't do a really great job of teaching business skills, marketing skills to the kids in our current system, because our current education system is set up to feed the industrial machine. That's just the way that it's, that's why education was created, and that's why it is. And that's why it's so exciting for people like me, because this is kind of what I'm sinking my teeth into in my career and what I do. And how are we going to manage through this? How is a Gen Xer boss working at a large corporation going to manage the millennial generation now as independent contractors? It's just absolutely fascinating. And it's a great study on how organizations shift and change. However, it is darn scary for a lot of individuals out there, especially those that are unemployed now. You're going to have to shift your whole mindset. It's going to be painful for a while, but I think it's pretty exciting.
One of the sort of mottos I came up with for Occupy Seattle is maybe a T-shirt. Occupy Seattle isn't working, because that's what a lot of the middle, a lot of, you know, straight people are saying. It's not working. And then you put it in parentheses, for them. So stop working for the people who are creating this industrialized civilization, which is destroying, it's going to destroy the atmosphere, right? It's going to pop like a soap bubble, and we're going to burn up if we don't do something about changing
that. It's just not sustainable. I mean, when you look at, I mean, and this isn't down with the corporate America. It's not like that at all. But I mean, if you look at it from a bigger perspective, what we traditionally looked at in terms of why corporations were set up and how corporations were funded, and even our tax structure before Reagan, where corporate executives and CEOs and owners of businesses were heavily rewarded for investing back into their businesses, to the whole shift to globalization. Everybody is having to take a big bite of this crap sandwich, so to speak, and having to figure out how we're going. Can I say that on the radio? Is that one of the seven things I can't say
you
on the
radio?
You can,
but I don't want to analyze that expression too much. I have lunch before the show.
It could have been a lot worse. But we all have to take a bite. We're all there. I mean, there are a few evil people in the world, but there's a lot of people out there who have to try to figure out how we're going to make this work.
Well, you know, the word for economy and home economics, you know, they're the same word. And also the word for ecumenical, they all come from economos or kononos or something in Greek.
Some Greek thing, right?
Yeah. And it basically means housekeeping. So you know, we've cultivated a mystique around the economy, which I think has really confused the whole civilization. When basically what I think we need to ask ourselves is, what do we need to make this little home we live on, this little blue planet, work?
Yeah.
And if you are doing something that's not making it work, you should stop doing it.
Right.
I think that, and now, and we've seen how ready people are for that. That's why this Occupy movement, I think, which is really about occupation, not just where you live, is magical. That word itself is magical. It's the word of the year by several people. I've heard these wordsmiths. So This is what my advice to everyone who's listening. If you are doing something that you would not be doing in utopia, stop. Just stop. It's not complicated. If you were in a house and the house were on fire and you were doing anything besides, and you couldn't get out, just like you can't get off the earth, besides putting out that fire, you would not continue to do that. And there's no difference except for in magnitude about what's in terms of what's going on in the world now.
Right.
We're burning up our atmosphere. We're killing 2/3 of the people on the planet of poverty before the age of 40. Stop what you're doing. Fix the problem. Don't think about money. You won't think, oh, my God, am I going to get paid to put this fire out in my house? You're going to be dead if you don't.
Yeah.
You're going to be dead. And your children certainly will be dead. And your grandchildren, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
So well, let's get practical. Don't be mystified by the economy. It seems so complicated. Pick up a broom and fix the problem.
It's a huge issue and it's a huge system. I mean, we are all cogs in the wheel, so to speak. We're all microbes in the universe. So there are things that we can and cannot change. And I think that, you know, coming from someone, myself included, that was very much a large part of corporate America. That is what I focused all of my energies on, even ahead of my family, to being able, because of very fortunate circumstances. I'm the first person to say that I would not have been able to do any of this, including be on the radio today, if I hadn't been, in some cases, pretty darn lucky. With the timing that I was able to get out and what happened with the business that allowed me to do this financially.
Mm.
Not a lot of people are in the same boat. In fact, majority of the people aren't. We're going to talk a little bit more when we come back, because I want to talk more about this movement. But I also want to open this up and make it a little bigger, Tim. I think you and I could have a really great discussion
no
on this.
Problem.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on KKNW Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Down Utopia.
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and with my wife, Michelle, we're local residents just like you who have a passion to help those who have been harmed or wronged in our communities. If you have a personal injury from a car crash or a property hazard, an industrial injury, a defective product, or nursing home neglect issue, the Pearson Law Firm can help you anywhere, anytime. Contact us today for a free case evaluation at 1-800-423-8473. That number again is 1-800-423-8473. Or check us out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Hello, this is Kim Ariano of Walk the Talk with Kim. The reality is staggering. South Africa has one of the highest incidences of HIV/AIDS in the world. This fact results in millions of orphans left in the care of other family members, friends, or fending for themselves in child-headed households. Focus on Itemba offers orphans and vulnerable children a new direction in life through loving foster care homes with committed parents and a real opportunity for a good education. Please consider sponsoring a child to receive the needed stability to change their world. Go to itembakids.org. Or follow the links from walkthetalkwithkim.com. Remember the pink tow truck? It was a Seattle icon. But did you know the mastermind behind the marketing was also one of Seattle's successful entrepreneurs? Learn life lessons from Ed Lincoln by reading his new autobiography, Life Through the Rearview Mirror. Available at area bookstores and online, go to walkthetalkwithkim.com and click on the link.
Does your organization crave new ideas? ThinkShop can help. For 16 years, ThinkShop has inspired creative thinking at Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and nonprofits. We help you imagine new offerings, strategies, or ways of doing business. Our proven processes and engaging workshops deliver powerful results. Learn more at thinkshop.com.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm here with my producer, Eric, as well as Tim Anderson. And Tim, when this whole Occupy movement, Occupy Wall Street, started to explode, Tim was right there on the front lines with the rest of the folks for Occupy Seattle.
Confused.
Yes. It seems there's a lot of Occupy movements. And I want to say, when I say Occupy movement, I'm kind of putting this whole umbrella because there seems to be factions, differences of thought, the whole forming, storming, norming, performing thing that we see in organizational development is alive and well, certainly in the Occupy movement.
Storming's well.
Yeah, the storming's kind of the most exciting part. That's, you know, the first step is forming, and forming is, hey, let's get together and solve a problem. And it can be something as simple as, three people getting together to figure out what you're going to do for a marketing strategy, to millions of people that are getting together to say, we don't know how to fix the world, but what we're in doesn't work for us right now. So we're going to get together to have that discussion. And then that leads to the storming phase. And the storming phase is, I've got an idea. Well, your idea sucks. I've got a better idea. Well, I like my idea and your idea is good. But what about this idea? And who should we invite to the table? And it's this whole ego storm, for lack of a better term, of people bringing their essence and their passions to the conversation on what they think should happen.
Yeah.
And you have to go through that phase. You can't skip that phase. Perfect utopia or perfect belief would mean we go right from norming to performing, or we go right from forming to performing. And that never happens. That just does not happen. Something gives. Somebody compromises. Somebody doesn't bring something to the table. Somebody is not able to express and be free if you go right from forming to performing. You have to go through that storming phase. And what you learn out of that storming phase is real critical. You learn what doesn't work and what does work. And what doesn't work purges. What does work moves on to the norming phase. And the norming phase is where you start to go, okay, here's the rules. Here's the skills and talents that are brought to the table. Here's the types of conversations we want to focus on. And then once you get that norming phase done, then you actually move into a performing stage where you're actually making significant changes. And just like the grieving process, you have to go through those four stages in order to really perform. Unfortunately, groups sometimes give up during the storming phase, or they fracture. And so now you've got more forming, storming, norming, performing going on in different factions before you ever really get to that norming phase. Or you get to that norming phase and there's just no energy left to actually get to performing. But you have to care and feed for all of the different pieces.
Right.
And so I mentioned to you before and as we've been talking that there certainly is a storming phase going on that you see inside and outside of the movement because, mm-hmm. you know, you got equal and opposite reactions. So you've got the actual movement itself, and then you've got the anti-movement or the counter-movement that is seeking to suppress, destroy, that's buy whatever's
off.
Going on there, whatever it is, or buy
a
off
modify.
Or modify or, yeah, or be a part of it. That group, too, is also going through its own forming stages mm-hmm. of organizational development. So with that said, enough, you know, organizational lecture here. Where are we in terms of what do you feel is going on today in the movement since we talked? We talked, what, about a month ago?
I think about then, yeah.
Yeah.
5 weeks.
About a month ago, you were just getting to the stage where the General Assembly, or the GA that you call it, was starting to be productive, maybe not, mm-hmm. maybe starting to form and have an agenda, so to speak.
Yeah. Or starting to look for a way to function.
Yeah.
And we're still struggling.
Yeah.
The GA is a mess still. I don't think it has any legitimacy yet at all, but it's starting to at least realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of this movement is about democracy. It's not just about the economy. It's like, how do we get our democracy back? In other words, it's about not being bought off. And we, in some ways, have been less democratic than the U.S. Congress and Senate. And that is really quite a strong critique. And I say it without hesitation and no apologies at all. I think almost everyone would admit that. I mean, we're supposed to be the 99%, you know, and we probably don't represent a tenth of 1% of Seattle. We don't even represent a decent percentage of our own Seattle movement when we have GAs. We don't make any attempt, real attempt, to get people there to make decisions with us.
Why do you think that is? What do you think is the underlying energy behind the GAs?
Well, there's a lot you could say to answer that. I mean, just one insight that I'll pull out of my hat, and because it's very much up today because of what's been going on in GA the last couple of days. I think it's to the advantage of this younger group of anarchists who are leaning towards being open to violence. They can function better in chaos because they don't have a very strong they don't have strong numbers. People see me as a strong critic of the violent anarchists, but I have to say that they do bring a lot of energy and a lot of smart ideas. And I, for a long time, was thinking, okay, we can work with these people. You know, we can win them over.
Right.
You know, Gandhi can overcome, you know, Conan. But so far, Conan is kicking Gandhi's booty. And because these people are just, without hesitation, jumping in and just taking things over. They, I think, they're not as stupid as they act. They act like young and naive and just angry and spit at you and all that. But there's some very smart people behind the violent anarchist movement. I forgot the guy's name, but there's some, you know, very smart older guy who's in Oregon or something who's like, you know, issuing marching orders. And this is becoming more and more clear to me that the chaos is an environment in which you can thrive if you are a minority and you don't want to be outvoted. What I don't think that they're getting and what they're starting to understand is most of us aren't interested in outvoting anybody. That's kind of what sociocracy and real democracy, deep democracy, is about. You don't outvote people. You come up with the smartest idea. And I think they're starting to go, oh, my God, these people really aren't trying to vote us out, even though we're the far, far violent left,
mm-hmm.
you know, just short of, you know, terrorists, you know, like throwing bottles and, you know, crap like that.
What do they want? What do you think that they
what
want?
What we all want. Justice and sustainability. It's very interesting. It's a throwback. It's like, you know, these people, these young violent anarchists are saying, you know, you old guys want violence. But us old guys, people in our 40s and 50s, we're like, what do you mean violence is new? That's what's been going on for 12,000 years. You're claiming it's the new social justice strategy? We've only been doing nonviolence. We haven't even hardly started. You know, we've had a few revolutions in the Velvet Revolutions that have been nonviolent, you know, maybe a dozen at the most, and it's influenced some of the others. This is new, and you guys are claiming that it's old school. And so everyone's claiming that they're the new thing, you know, but it's very hard for us to swallow the idea that violence is some new social strategy.
I keep getting this whole, those that do not learn history are doomed to repeat it
exactly.
In my head.
Exactly.
Do you have any really good historians, any real good, you know, figures that are wise in the ways of
there is nothing new? There is one guy, David, I'm trying to think of his last name.
Not David Corton.
Well, he's very good. No, there's a local guy in our little Occupy Seattle Nonviolence Group, who has been speaking up, and he seems to be quite wise. And he used to be more sort of in the violent anarchist crew. I mean, he used to be saving people from arrest and all this, you know, what I consider to be nonsense, not serious nonviolent strategy or tactics. But he has come from it, through it, and when he speaks, people on both sides listen really carefully. There's a lot of smart people. You know, in their 30s and 40s and 50s in this movement in Seattle who speak up a lot on the Facebook groups where we're having these debates, you know, what should we do next? And the real question, just in case you're interested, is should we have two Occupy Seattles? Sort of a Occupy Nonviolent and an Occupy Violent.
They Occupy Seattle Light and...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things you could call it. They're calling it the Decolonize group. But I think everyone wants to have the label. So everyone's going to want to be called Occupy Seattle.
Right.
No, and we're going to fight over the label now. And a lot of people are saying, no, we can stay together. I know we can be united. I think it's foolishness.
Yeah.
You know, if you have two separate means, how are you ever going to get anything done? If you can't be violent and nonviolent at the same time, but there's any violence, it's violent.
Right.
Right? It's violent. If it's not nonviolent, it's violent, period. And folks think that we can sort of solve that problem. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a way. But I've been trying for months as this thing started.
I think there should be more than two. I think there should be a lot. I mean, that's democracy, right? I mean, if you only have two schools of thought and you have to conform to those two schools of thought, look what's happening in our political infrastructure right now. You've got two parties and it would probably serve us very well to have more.
Sure.
So as long as, and in fact, that's almost healthier because then it's not a good versus evil, depending on which side you're on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of diversity of means, but then a common discussion. Okay, so, you know, 30 of you feel that the way to get there is different. We got that. Mea culpa. you know, because if you only have two, then it's our way's right, your way's wrong. That's easy. That's an easy conversation to get passionate about, especially if you're ignorant and don't educate yourself on what the real issues are. But the more you have, then you can say, okay, we all have different ways of getting there. Can we at least agree on the problem that we want to solve? And that's, to me, is the first step.
We do agree on that.
I mean, that's awesome.
That's pretty clear. I mean, I think the whole Occupy movement and the whole world is like, we got to get the money out of politics and related issues.
Right.
I mean, no one's fighting about that.
I mean, there's certain standards like corporate personhood. I mean,
sure.
I think that everybody can probably agree on. Now, how you solve that problem is, you know, different.
Glass-Steagall, you know, change the laws. Sure.
Right. Vote differently, you know, go out there and do it. But it would seem that all the people that are representing all the different factions can say, okay, whatever your thought process is, go to the people that think like you, you know, and rally. And everybody
and
goes and rallies.
And send representatives. And to some degree, we really want everyone together. Because what we have on the left, and I've said this before on this show, is we have a lot of people.
Yeah.
Probably globally, we have something like 85% of the people. Without even taking a vote, we know that they want justice and sustainability. It's maybe as high as 99%. Who really wants to blow up the world or to destroy our atmosphere or to have rampant hunger? But how, you know, what is a number that we can get together and do something with? Maybe it's 20%, the cultural creatives plus the radicals plus the liberals plus the progressives and some of the moderates. That's 20% right there. 20%, if we could do anything together, and it probably would exclude the violent left because they're not going to want to work in the same way. But if we get that 20%, which is somewhere between the violent left on the far left, you know, and then there's the next 20%, and then there's the rest. If we could get those 20% on the left to do anything together, wouldn't matter what we did, we'd win. The whole house of cards would come down if we could actually unite and self-govern. Now, 20% is a huge amount of people to be working together. And that's, to me, the goal. And until we really have those 20% self-governing, thinking, working together, we should still be trying to get them on the same page.
Right.
And trying to decide without them on board in the decision-making process is just silly and undemocratic, in my opinion, and not very
visionary. It's going to come back to bite you in the keister.
It's a waste
making
of time.
The same mistake over again.
It's a waste of time to have 40 people sitting around, you know, the convention center trying to decide what the direction of Occupy Seattle should be. It's ridiculous. It's a farce. Get 20% of the people in Seattle together through a decision-making process. Probably sociocratic. I never heard of anything smarter. Or it could be something better, you know. Whatever it is, I don't give a damn. Make it happen and then decide together, do it, and we're finished.
So has the group come closer to identifying what the tenets are or what the, you know, I know that there's not an official, you know, here's what Occupy or here's what the 99% is fighting for, because it's a lot of different things. But has the group solidified a little bit on focus? At all?
Well, as I said before, I do believe the goals are given. Mm. You know, economic justice, political justice, getting the money out of politics, and everything that ramifies from those things. Mm-hmm. You know, justice and sustainability. Mm-hmm. Nobody really debates that inside the movement. Nobody. It's only the conservative press that keeps on rambling on about how they can't decide what their goal is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not even on the table amongst even you can get the most conservative in our movement and the most radical together, and they agree on that.
Right.
Period. And everybody who knows anything knows that. That's a straw dog, whatever that's called. A straw whore, straw car, I don't know.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, obviously we know that economic issues are a part of it. So is the group working towards, you know, coming up with language or terms that, for example, let's talk about corporate personhood, which I think most people would agree is not helpful to have a corporation treated as a person in terms of voting and all the finance and stuff. So I would say, okay, this is something that the 99% would like to see changed because that would significantly help us. So here's the steps or here's the things that we would like to see changed in working with Congress and the House as opposed to doing something completely different.
At this
or have
point,
you not gotten that far?
No, the port action came up, you know. So I think we're a pretty sort of activist oriented group right now because we are really still that 1% on the far left, the violent and nonviolent. We're all in that far left 1%. So we're very open to like, let's go down and shut the port down. So we get 1,000 people down there. I wasn't able to make it, but a lot of people went down to Olympia, and that was a legislative approach, and that was a big deal. So I think both approaches are on the table, and I think a lot of people are willing to try whatever works.
Good.
But we still don't have enough people involved to make to really succeed at anything. I mean, to me, 1,000 people in Occupy Seattle is a joke. We should have 20,000 people. Mm. And we've had, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people at Westlake back in the spring when we were a little, it was a little warmer.
Yeah. And it was in the air.
The electricity spring, was in the air. I meant the fall, yeah.
In the fall time. Sorry. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's bring up that subject and talk a little bit more about getting involved and who should be involved and how you see that movement moving forward. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can get more information on walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Have you heard the phrase, the beatings will continue until morale improves? To organizations, employees are the biggest assets and biggest fans. If they're not feeling heard or appreciated, the bottom line will suffer. For mission-driven organizations, the reliance on employees and managers to rally around the core messaging is critical for success. At Walk the Talk for Success, we provide leadership best practices, education, and communication strategies for mission-driven organizations. Whether you're a business of one, middle manager, or leader in a large company or nonprofit, our experiential workshops and focused on organizational psychology will assist you in achieving success with your messaging and vision. Call for a free consultation today, 425-888-9790, or check us out at www.walkthetalkwithkim.com. Walk the Talk for Success, achieving your message through understanding human behavior.
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and since 1977, we at the Pearson Law Firm have guided individuals and their families through the legal process to seek justice and restitution in insurance disputes and personal injury claims. At the Pearson Law Firm, we work hard to secure justice in civil matters with a network of resources, a wealth of experience, and a compassionate attitude. That's the Pearson Promise. Contact us at 1-800-423-8473. That's 1-800-423-8473 for a free case evaluation, or check us out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Do you wish you could train your brain to be more creative? ThinkShop can help. For 16 years, ThinkShop has trained individuals at Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and nonprofits. Learn our proven process to think creatively and make great ideas happen. Our trainings are offered in person and online. Learn more at thinkshop.com.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on KKNW AM 1150. I should have mentioned that if you want to contribute to this conversation, if you want to call baloney, or if you've got some ideas, or if something has sparked
that.
You.
Yeah. I'm a blowhard.
I'm putting it out there, baby. You can call in at 425-373-5527. Again, 425-373-5527. Or you can call toll-free in Western Washington at 888-298-KKNW. That's 888-298-5569. Again, feel free to call in if you want to talk about the Occupy movement, if you want to talk about what we talked about before and the independent workers. Maybe you were a part of corporate America like me and decided to become an independent worker like me. Love to hear your stories and any advice that you have for the next generation. You can call in at 425-373-5527. So as we were going to the break, Tim, I asked the question, who should be involved? And while it was just kind of a flip question, it actually is a pretty deep question because, you know, the answer would be, well, everybody should be involved.
Of course.
But involvement needs to be defined, you know. So is somebody actually going down there and attending GA? Is that what you need? Do you need, you know, people like myself who are talking about it and keeping the conversation going and bringing up ideas, but I'm not at GA yet? He looks at me. I could tell he's like, yet. You need to come to GA.
I don't go to GA much.
Yeah, or whatever it is. I mean, the obvious answer to me is you participate where you feel passionate about, but even that's a little bit flip. Let's talk tactics. Mm-hmm. Who should be involved? And what are some different ways that people are getting involved that may not be as visible as a tent, mm-hmm. But in their own communities are getting involved?
Well, just right off the top, if you want a world for your children and your children's children to live in, you better be involved. This is a moment. This is an opportunity. Nobody expected this. I bet we couldn't find anyone who wrote that you would have a global movement of these proportions. Something happened. It's almost like suddenly you're pregnant and you're giving birth to, you don't even know what it, you don't know what gender it is. You don't even know what species it is. And that's what's happening here. All of a sudden, the earth, like St. Paul said, you know, we're pregnant with expectation that there's a new kingdom being born, a new realm is coming to pass. And you see people who are older activists, you know, at Occupy, and they just come up and they say, this is it, isn't it? And I'm like, I kind of think this is it. This is what we have hoped for since the 60s. And not to sort of get on board when we have this opportunity, which probably won't ever come again, in a way is a form of suicide. I mean, find a way to get involved, because, you know, civilization is going off the cliff. It really is. For, you know, 2/3 of the people on this planet are dying of poverty. Mm-hmm. And the chances of not having, you know, of having a, you know, an environment that works for our children are really quite small, according to most climate scientists. So, you know, there's no a lot of people go, oh, it's all violent, you know, Occupy Seattle is dangerous. And that is only true if you go to an action, a demonstration. The worst that's going to happen if you go to a meeting is some, you know, kind of angry young activist, what are they called, violent anarchist or black person may snarl at you and get mad at you. But if, you know, if you just go and contribute, unless you take them on like I do, you know, you're not going to be threatened with being spat upon as I have been, you know. it's not going to go to that place. There's a lot of really loving, smart, creative people of all ages at all of the meetings, and you can find those meetings on OccupySeattle.org, and there's a ton of things happening, meetings indoors mostly now, but all over the place there's stuff. And what I'm pushing and what I recommend is coming to our Occupy Seattle Nonviolence group, which is a Facebook group, and we meet on Sunday afternoons. But you can do whatever you're good at. There's a bunch of people working in the outreach, in the computer section, in the media group. A lot of those people mostly work from home online, and there's just I know you're working a little bit on the radio stuff. Mm-hmm. There's just so many places to plug in, and I would strongly recommend, to the extent that you possibly can, quit your job, you know, quit whatever it is you're doing, like watching TV or eating French fries or, you know, to the extent that you can, get involved in this, because this is a love revolution. This is the most amazing thing that's happened in my lifetime. And I've been alive since 1956. And I saw the 60s. I was near Berkeley. I was in Sacramento. And this is different. This is better. This is bigger. This is smarter. This is much more mature. I mean, this baby's being born as a teenager.
You know, I see it, the system really as an iceberg, and I know that's such a cliche thing to use, and so maybe I'll use something different. So there's this concept in gardening of all things that when you first plant a plant, it looks like it's dying. It looks mm-hmm. like it's almost dead. And what you see is all of the energy, or what's really happening is all of the energy of that plant is going into developing a strong root system. Mm-hmm. And the system is you know, struggling and growing and moving and shifting, and it'll hit a rock and have to go around it. Mm-hmm. It develops new shoots. It goes in a million different directions. And then, so that's what we call the sleep phase. When you first plant a plant, it's in sleep. And for a couple of years, you look at it and you're ready to rip it out because it's ugly and it looks like it's dead. Mm-hmm. But if you wait, you can start to see that it goes from a sleep phase into a creep phase, where you start to see the plant slowly showing signs of life. Mm-hmm. It might sprout a few leaves here. It might grow a new branches here. And you're still looking at it going, you know, that plant is ugly. I need to rip it out. But if you're patient, it goes to the leap phase, where all of the energy shifts from the root system and from the base level in the system to the top. And that's where you see plants absolutely explode. And for anyone that's a gardener, you get this. For those of you that aren't, keep with me here, where all of this energy, years in some cases, you know, 3 or 4 years of energy all of a sudden the plant erupts and explodes, and it gets, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 times as big as it was when you first planted it.
I like that.
And I see that happen in corporate infrastructures, in new teams. I'm also seeing that a lot in this group, where the feeling that I get is that root system. And so it doesn't look real pretty up top. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, we need to rip this thing out and come up with something different. But patience, patience, patience. Let the root system develop. Let it cull the pieces of the root that aren't working and work on the ones that are and get going. You soon start to see kind of this fruition.
Well, so when you say that this is a leap,
yeah.
I mean, we've been creeping since, sleeping and creeping since the 60s. Or even the 30s, you know, the union movement.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's this, like, you know, it's almost like all of a sudden this little thing has, that had died and seemingly died in the 60s. It's all of a sudden, it's the spring, as it were. The spring, at least in Arab spring. And all of a sudden, we had a little flower called the Occupy movement. And yeah, maybe now it's sort of dying, sort of underground again. But I do think, and let me just say one thing about the dividing. You know, a lot of people are, you know, peace at any price, unity at any price. I don't think that's smart. That's not the way good decisions are made. There's sometimes when you cannot get on the same page. You can't be violent, nonviolent. And you just, as you said, you just go around the rock. You divide. You don't try to stop the river. The river just comes to a rock and it just divides. One side does the violent thing. One side does the nonviolent thing. Maybe we get down the road a couple months and all of a sudden we go, you know what? I kind of get what you're about. Because I'll be honest, I do not get what they're about. And I don't think they get what we're about either.
Yeah.
We just are not hearing each other. We're talking right past each other. And there's magic on both sides. So I do think it would be nice if we could all be together. But right now, let's not stop the river just because we got a rock dividing us. Let's divide. Let's just keep moving. Our feeling is on the nonviolent side that there's a lot of people, maybe as much as 50, 100,000 people in the greater Seattle area who want to be involved in this if it were nonviolent. If a family-oriented, right. If you could do it and still not throw rocks at cops.
Right.
And you can. You can. Please do it. Please join. Don't wait for it to be all cleaned up and have no dirty boys and, you know, throwing water at the cops. You know, they're never going to go away to some degree. And listen to them. You can learn something from them, even though I think they're mostly wrong. You know, they have a lot of energy and they care about this planet where your children are going to grow up.
And you mentioned there are two events. Do you want to talk about those events now?
We have the Occupy Seattle Nonviolence Group has gotten, we haven't, I'm not saying we started these, but we have decided that we're really going to get behind them. And one of them is what we're calling a Flash Occupy. That's on December 23rd. There's going to be the big thing on Lake Union about with the boats called the Holiday Boat Parade.
Uh-huh.
And we're having a Flash Occupy. We're inviting people to bring their tents and set them up in Gasworks Park. It's nonviolent, family-oriented, although we don't have a permit. It wouldn't shock me if somebody went and got one, but we're sort of, you know, we don't need a permit. We're above that, man. So this is all our world, which is, you know, I resisted that for a long time, but now I'm kind of like, okay, you know, the mayor loves us. He's not going to kill us. But, you know, if you want to get a permit, feel free. But that's going to be exciting. We're going to stay there all night, and we're going to talk to whoever comes and hold a press conference, and we're going to sing around the fire, and we're going to have music, and we'll probably have teach-ins. And it's a nice time to be at Gasworks Park because there's a lot of boats and they have fires and I don't know what else they have going.
And so that would be Thursday.
I think it's Friday.
Or Friday. Friday, yeah.
23rd. And then this is a little ways off, but Occupy the Courts. There's some people, Tom Hartman and...
Oh, excellent.
What's that brilliant guy's name?
Love him.
Are doing something at the Supreme Court, and they're asking us to do courts, to occupy the courts all over. And so on January 20th and 21st, mostly 20th, I think, we're going to do a nonviolent opportunity for arrest, what's going to be creative and theatrical with singing and prayer and healing. We're going to try to work with the violent folks so it can be safe for everybody and everyone can get there. And we kind of have maybe a red zone and a green zone if you know, they're going to be there in force. But we're really going to work very, very hard to make that family friendly also. And also, it's a great time to get arrested. I'll probably get arrested for my first time. Not in the first time here. First time here, but, you know, I've been arrested a dozen times before. But I really like to get arrested in a way where I'm prepared and there's a big
affinity group. Spoken like a girl going to her prom.
Yeah.
It's my first time being arrested.
Well, you really will feel like this is the right, in a way that you'll never feel any other time. You'll have a sense when you're in the paddy wagon that you are in the right place.
So Tim is telling you to quit your job and get arrested, but somewhere between that and doing nothing is the right thing. Just come and be there and support.
Absolutely. Right? Get into an affinity group and support the people who do want to go to jail. And we're going to arrange it so, you know, you're not going to be in jail forever. And it's going to be like maybe an hour or two and a misdemeanor
and all that stuff.
We do these things, you know, for good press. And hopefully there won't be bottles flying and horses stomping so the press is not all focused on that nonsense.
Right. We do have to take a break. We're overdue. But when we come back, we're going to finish up talking with Tim and the Occupy Seattle movement. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I will have all this information on these events on walkthetalkwithkim.com, as well as a replay of this episode that you can send out to your family and friends to get involved and make a difference in your world.
Hi, I'm Jerry Pearson, and at our firm, whether we're working on an automobile crash case or helping a client who's been injured by a defective product, we focus on justice. We're passionate about serving our clients. Our successful approach focuses on the right issue at the right time with the best tools and expertise available. We focus on collaboration and cooperation. Clients support that process, and they respect our abilities to manage the legal process, to demystify it, and to explain choices and opportunities, and also their responsibilities. Contact us at 1-800-423-8473 or PearsonLawFirm.com. That's PearsonLawFirm.com. Or you can check us out at WalkTheTalkWithKim.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Here's a unique way to give back. Snoqualmie Valley business owner Chris Fagan of Think Shop is using her family adventure as a way to raise money for good. In December, her family will climb Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in Africa, to help raise money to build two classrooms at a school in Tanzania. Learn more or make a donation at KilimanjaroForKids.com.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk, 1150.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I wanted to share a story of wisdom that I had heard from a gentleman by the name of Dr. Jacob Needleman. And Dr. Needleman is a professor of philosophy down in San Francisco. And he had talked about the different religions and that imagine a mountain, a giant mountain, maybe Mount Everest. And you put the different religions, you've got Buddhists, you know, on the north side of the base of the mountain. And you've got, you know, Jewish on the east side, and you've got Christian on the other side and Muslim, and, you know, disperse all the different religions. And everybody's down at the base of the mountain. And you can't see around the mountain to see that there's different religions on the other side or different beliefs and thoughts on the other side. And you're so isolated because the base is so large and so wide that you're isolated from even comprehending or understanding that there's a difference in thought and opinion. But then imagine that as you go up the mountain of enlightenment, whatever that means for you and your religion, whether that means closer to God, whether that means enlightenment, whatever that means for you or for these individuals in their religion, but they select a path. And depending upon which side of the mountain on, the path might be really super steep. The path might be meandering and walking, but it's just a different path. It's a different perspective. It's a different way of getting up in the mountain. But it's interesting because the closer you get to the top of the mountain, the more the paths go from being many paths to being a few, and the more the paths start to intertwine with each other, and the more that you intersect and you congregate and you figure out the different religions as you come across them through your journey, up until the point when you get to the top of the mountain and you look around at your Buddhist friend and your Christian friend and your Jewish friend and your Muslim friend and your Taoist friend, and you realize, and even your anarchist friend and all that, you realize that the path and the journey was the only difference. but that the goal and the belief and the dream mm-hmm. and the accomplishment is shared by all. And I think about that because right now and throughout history, there is this global split between how do we get to utopia. Mm-hmm. Some people's utopia might be dying with more money than anybody else. Somebody's utopia might be, you know, having a functional relationship. Some people's utopia is making sure that everybody's fed. But at the end of the day, we all have dreams and passions and we're meandering and working our way up. But there's really no difference in what we want. And what we core want is safety, security, love, understanding. That's what we all really want. Happiness and freedom. That's what we all want. And so what is beautiful about the Occupy movement for me personally is that message, in my mind, is what it's really about. Whether the people that are actually doing it are living it or not, it doesn't really matter. As somebody like myself who's looking at what's happening, that I want to empower everybody to be able to take whatever path up the mountain, because it's not my job to judge how they get up there, because they got to figure it out on their own.
Exactly.
It's as long as people are moving, and as long as people aren't giving up, and as long as people aren't hopeless, and as long as people aren't feeling that they have to kill somebody else in order to get up the mountain. And I think that that's why I want to get involved, and why I feel that a lot of people that are like me, that, you know, live in the suburbs and are soccer moms and have children and volunteer a lot of time to our communities and really care and are trying to find our passion. That's no different than somebody living in a tent. That's, you know, that's, we're all fighting for the same common cause.
Absolutely.
And so it reminded me, and I want to pay a little homage to Dr. Jacob Needleman, because his wisdom, and I've got some books I'll go ahead and put on the site. He is a study of history. In fact, one of my favorite books, now I'm not going to remember the name of it, but it is about what we learned about our democracy from our forefathers and the struggles that each of our presidents and people that started this country from Washington to Lincoln, that they faced. And they're all the same. Even though the time was different, the struggles were exactly the same. Yeah. And we're seeing it again. And we can choose to walk through this with grace and understanding and love, or we can choose to walk through this with ignorance and ego. And that's really our choice. And we can be the same person and hate and do it on the same day. But just accepting that that's the path, and let's just keep moving and keep moving forward. So I applaud, Tim, what you're doing, and that you come on the show and so eloquently talk about what you think needs to happen, because I think it's really important.
That's my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. And so again, on December 23rd, you've got the Flash Occupy. When you said that, I kept thinking Flash, you know, lifting up the shirt, or a Flash Mob. You're going to do a,
some people have
do
short,
a thriller rendition.
Some people have shortened it to Flash Your Pie.
No.
We're not going there. But we want to continue to do that, by the way.
That's Occupy Mardi Gras. That's coming
that's
a little
Occupy
later.
Occupy Mardi Gras. That's right. All right.
I think we'll be doing more of those, too.
Yeah.
Like maybe every day.
That would be awesome.
So we can go to a different place, a different shopping center, a different bank, a different corporate headquarters.
Yourself. Very good.
Yeah.
I like it.
Carpool.
And then on January 20th, I had a friend of mine that wanted to bike down there. She's been on the show before. You were on the radio and she was on the show. She's like, oh yeah, let's go down to the movement. We could bike down there. And I looked at her like, you're nuts. I'd pass out. There's no way I could get from Snoqualmie down there. But they did. They biked and then they kayaked down there and they did. It's really great. So yeah,
that.
Good for them. I love it. And then on the 20th and 21st of January, it's Occupy the Courts, and it was Tom Hartman, and you remembered it was Dr. Cornel West was the other one who's going to be
there. Two of them are calling for this.
Very good.
And I think the movement's behind it, too.
Very good. So somebody who's interested, say, you know what, I'm inspired, but I have no idea, where would you suggest that they go?
Just go to the site. Go to OccupySeattle.org.
Okay, OccupySeattle.org.
And go to look at the calendar and find something and check
that
it out.
That you want to do.
Or join a committee.
Or at a minimum, talk about it. Talk about it in your own community. I think people are so afraid, and I'm speaking again for myself, to even talk about it openly, because maybe their friend's a Republican, or and for some reason they're afraid of offending them, or maybe, you know, they're afraid to offend somebody who works for Microsoft or what have you. I've even heard that today without getting them specific. Somebody says, you know, I have to be careful about how outspoken I am because I have board members, you know, with my nonprofit.
That's nonsense.
And so I would encourage, just, you know, you don't have to get righteous and stand on soapbox and scream at people, but just open the conversation. Let's see. You don't know what other people are thinking. They might actually be thinking a lot about you. We're running out of time. I want to wish everybody happy holidays. Enjoy happy holidays to you as well, Tim, and to you, Eric. Thank you. Happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you very much.
Happy, happy, happy. And enjoy. And if you do anything else.
Happy solstice. That's
happy
today.
Everything. Yes, exactly. Shortest day of the year. Love. Just love. Hug your kids. Hug your family. Hug your Uncle Bob that you don't like, but just hug him anyway. You'll feel better. Yeah. Go out there and have a beautiful day. Thank you for listening. Don't let him vote. Have a beautiful day. It's a beautiful